There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 934, April 18th, 2022. Nasser?
Thank you, sir. I say Formula One from Imola to Florida on the next two weekends. And keep an eye on your watch, Charles. Back to you, sir.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, LCH refuses to remove any jewelry. His pierced nipples are his business. Dr. Marco tells Max, cool your jets, dude. Monaco not in danger this week. And we have a special interview with Miss Jan Harvey, spouse of former F1 insider. Nas will explain gladly. And just a reminder, we need your contributions to keep this program up on the cloud. We got to keep Google happy. So if you can support us, click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know you want to. You know where to find it. Thank you. And Nas, welcome to the studio. How you been?
I'm doing very good, sir. Thank you. I know in the past we have talked about needles and pins, but getting down deep into nipples, that's a first for F1 Weekly. Congratulations, Mr. Rogers.
Thank you very much, but we know where the secrets lie. I've seen pierced nipples in my life, and sure enough, Lewis Hamilton is guilty as charged.
Yes. What else is happening on the left coast, sir? That's what we want to know.
I'm telling you, a lot of things are happening. We're talking Laguna Seca is already gearing up for the season. There's tickets are on sale. They want you to spend. So if you guys want to come out to F1 Weekly Terroir, well, Laguna Seca is the place that is the home track of the F1 Weekly Familia. And sure enough, there's going to be a lot of activities out here on the left coast, Nasser.
That's very good, sir. And there is quite a bit of activity in Italy. You know, Charles Leclerc is paying the price of fame and fortune. Did you hear? I just saw it late today that his $320,000 Richard Mille watch was stolen while he was signing autographs in a darkened alley somewhere in Italy. Did you hear that, sir?
I did hear it, and I'm very disappointed with Charles and everyone in his entourage, because in my facilities in the Palatial Studios, what we do here is we wear decoys, cheap imitation watches made at the flea market on Berryessa Road in beautiful downtown San Jose. So yeah, you put a decoy on and you leave the $320,000 Richard Mille watch in the glove box.
Yes, and you know, last year, Lando Norris had his watch stolen. And if you remember some years ago, Bernie received a couple of punches and his Hublot watch was stolen. And of course, Hublot made a lemonade out of that lemon by using Bernie's picture with a black eye in advertisement for Hublot watches, saying what people would do for a Hublot watch, not just for a Klondike bar.
Clever. So clever, these Swiss.
Yes, sir. And speaking of Charles Leclerc, the young man is on a hot, red-hot roll, I should say, not fazed by the 2021 world champion and his raging Red Bull. Still early days in the championship, but he is enjoying a fat lead in the championship over two major threats, some might say only one threat. But given the momentum the man has from Monaco, I think he will have the edge for round four at Imola coming this weekend. What say you, Senor?
Oh, absolutely. Not only does he have the edge, and apparently some guy in Italy has his watch. No, Ferrari is super competitive. They're super buoyant. They're happy to be in their home terroir. I'm telling you, Max is on the back foot, as they say, on the other side of the pond, meaning that he's suffering like an old woman because he knows all of a sudden, I mean, he had a flashback. He thought it said Renault Alliance on the back of his car.
Yes. So basically what you're saying is he's no longer lucky.
Yes. That lucky thing, you know, when it runs out, it's ugly, ugly, ugly. And see, luck is like energy. It never really burns out. It has to transfer and move to other locales. So, hey, we got a Russell, we've got a Leclerc that need a little luck, and we got a Magnussen, we got a Schumacher. So Mrs. Luck is just trying to hit the neighborhood.
Yeah, you know, when you run out of Lady Luck, what you do is you grab a beach chair and you look pretty.
Absolutely. And those are available, Fernando.com, for $19.95 plus shipping and handling.
Exactly. And sir, speaking of Max, you can never count him out when he is at the Villefay competitive car. I don't see him dropping out of two races in a row, but you never know. I will expect him to do at Imola what he does best every other place, hustle and try to muscle his way to the front and see what happens. Interestingly, at this stage of the championship, still early days, both Max and his BFF at Mercedes are behind their respective teammates in the standings. And I have a message for the teammates, Mr. Rogers, because in a Motown song they say, standing in the shadows of love, waiting for the heartache to come. Do you agree with me?
Absolutely. I can feel the pitter-patter of heartbreak right now.
Okay, sir. Then we move on to Carlito. Carlos Sainz Jr. For the first time in his career, he has the package to get not only his first race win, but a good chance of becoming world champion. In the first two races, he had two podiums, which is very impressive. But despite that, the man on the other side of the garage has two wins and a second, and more importantly, a huge lead over everybody, including Carlito. With the Australian kitty litter DNF behind him, by the time Carlito gets to race day on Sunday, he really needs to pull a fast one on Leclerc. Otherwise, things may not be so gentle on his mind. If his teammate can finish ahead of him in the first four races, then I will not be surprised if Senor Binotto says to Carlito, Bienvenido, you are now numero dos. And I think next question will be, would you like some spaghetti with Covey, or you prefer Rubinho? And that's the way the paella may crumble at the Scuderia. What say you?
Well, the Rubinho is outstanding, especially with the ranch dressing. You know, it's just very, very, very tasty indeed. No, he's in a heap of trouble, but we've seen this so many times where Lady Luck is just handing it out in small little tidbits, and Carlito has not gotten any of those tidbits. It's really nice to watch Charles rise up to the top when he needs to be rising to the top. And this is what separates the men from the boys. When you got the car, you need to do what you need to do the dirty deed.
And that Ferrari in blood red color, it's a beautiful machine.
It is indeed. Reminds me of blood sausage with a little, some shallots. And then you deglaze the pan with some Merlot. Delicious.
Oh, good, good. Now, what do you say about the luckless champions of the past will do? Lewis Hamilton, Fernando Alonso, Sebastian Vettel.
Well, Sebastian Vettel, boy, is he the talk of the town or what? They got pictures of him on that scooter everywhere. I guess that's the new meme or whatever you want to call those little je ne sais quoi. Or it could be a new I don't know. You know, there's so many acronyms. I'm running out of acronyms. But no, and you have to talk about Sebastian Vettel. Where is he going to go? I'm telling you, him and Jody Scheckter, I think I see farms, I see organic, I see cow manure.
Yes, yeah, things are not looking very green for Sebastian, even though he's in a very British racing green. I don't know if he can call that British racing green, but it's still green. So yeah, a lot of people are shooting slings and arrows at him, which is kind of sad. Hate to see a four-time world champion go out like that. Lewis, they need to get this humping and bumping sorted out before he can come back and win a race, because he's the only driver in history of Formula One who has won a race in every season he competed in. And we definitely want to see that trend keep going. How many he will win, it will all depend on the package. And as far as the machismo is concerned, Señor Fernando Alonso, what can I say? He wants to keep on trucking, whether he's in a Mack truck, which is owned by Renault, or a super fast truck. Only time will tell. But I can see him getting on a podium or two, and if the car is pretty decent overall package, he is also very good in the rain, but not as good as his ex-McLaren teammate and not as good as Max. I think you will have to concur on this last point.
I have no idea what you're talking about. Fernando is the best in the rain above them all.
No. I think the 2007 Japanese Grand Prix proved who is the best in the rain and who is not the best. They were in the same team. And do I need to tell you what happened there?
Acid rain. It was acid rain.
Yes. Excuse me while I kiss the sky, he said to Ron Dennis. But that's the way it goes. Anything else? Any surprises you expect in Imola, sir?
Well, no. I think Ferrari has to dominate. They will dominate. And I'm telling you, I think Red Bull has serious reliability issues, and Marco is saying, Dr. Marco is saying, Max, you need to really cool your jets. He's driving the car to a ridiculous force to be beckoned with, and I think he's causing a lot of problems. This Verstappen guy is too much for the car. The irony is, it shows you how hard it is to get four world championships by Renault. So, yeah, a lot of laughs.
But that's the Max style, you know, go Max out every qualifying session, every practice session, every lap. And that's why he's so exciting, and that's what made him the world champion. So I would like to see him do what he does best, charge like a Red Bull, and see what happens. But of course, you know, if Charles Leclerc wins again at Imola, then it's not going to be impossible, but it will be very hard to catch up. Because, you know, to catch up, whether it's Lewis or Max, they will have to win quite a few races in a row, which the way things are going, it's only a matter of time before the second Ferrari wins a race. And that will make it very, very difficult for anybody who is not driving the red Ferrari. But we shall see. But it's a long, long season. You know, stranger things have happened. 2016, Nico, he won the first four races. And at one time, he was down, had a 43-point lead over his teammate. And that was turned into a deficit. And he can thank the Malaysian Grand Prix guards of hellfire for Lewis done blowed up. Otherwise, he would still be racing and seeking to emulate his papa. But that's all in the past. We have to keep moving forward. Okay, sir. Now, given the wonderful performance of Ferrari, everybody's talking, and when people talk, we listen. So let's take a look at what some of them are saying. And we shall start with, who better than to quote John Elkann, the young chairman of Ferrari. He said, and I quote, "Like all our tifosis around the world, I am delighted we are competing at the highest level. That said, we know the season has just begun, and in Formula One, you are always surrounded by fierce competitors. We must work tirelessly as a team to optimize every aspect of our performance. That is the spirit and approach I look forward to seeing at Imola and as the season progresses." End quote. Do you remember a couple of years ago he said it will take a few years for us to get back on top, and now the whole Italian nation is singing, and it's very good for them, and I expect a huge crowd at Imola. And also, you know, Imola is much closer to the Ferrari factory than Monza, so let's see how many people show up, and it should be a good race.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome, 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 especially through the eyes of Fernando.
Yes, and now let's hear from Mika Hakkinen, and he says, and I quote, "Charles has taken two wins and a second place from these first three Grand Prix, while Max Verstappen has had one win and two non-finishes. At this level, you cannot afford to have constant technical failures. Max will not be happy." End quote. I think Max is a little bit more than not happy. He's a little capital P and capital O. What say you?
He is. I think he's rattled. He's pissed off. And it's not last year's car. That's the way it goes. Sometimes the car suits somebody else, and Max is in big trouble. He's fighting it all the way while Perez is loving it.
Yes, you know, and I am just thinking, you know, as much as Red Bull and Max would like to win, I've been thinking, you know, will Red Bull call Honda headquarters and say, "Look, tell us how much you want to get back in the game, even if not officially, but open the gates of R&D and just be involved like they were, as they were their own operation," because Red Bull has the resources to write them a big, big check. And I will not be surprised if some sort of a deal is made like this. Because Honda is now, instead of paying Red Bull to use their engine, they are now being paid a pretty penny by Red Bull and Mr. Mateschitz. So do you see that happening?
I do. You're right. They're going to have to get Honda back involved. If not, it's going to be very ugly. And you know what happens when things get ugly? They get uglier.
Yeah, and at Red Bull, there is one person who will never get the blame, and that's the number one driver. Don't take my word for it. Just send a tweet to Mark Webber. He should be able to confirm that. Not sure if he will confirm it gladly, but he will confirm that. Okay, sir, now we come to third man on the scene. The rain in Spain falls mainly on Sainz Jr. Giorgio Terruzzi, he is a journalist with Corriere della Sera. He writes, and I quote, "The unfortunate and nervous Sainz cannot compare with Leclerc and has been forced to be the running mate of the stargazing Charles. The fact that Sainz now demands equal treatment with Leclerc almost seems inappropriate." End quote. And have you ever seen inappropriate behavior in Formula One before, Mr. Rogers?
Never, especially at Ferrari. Just not happening.
Yeah, it's. I'm getting the feeling that based on performance, Carlos Sainz Jr. is now being put into the same trap as he was with teammate Max at Toro Rosso, where he was quite a match for him, but just Max V was the man of the moment, and he went places. Sainz, having followed his career for many years, is a very good talent. I would hate to see him crumble. And then when you get dejected, then you start pointing fingers, and once you lose trust with the team, as happened with both Lando and Sebastian Vettel at the same team, then the party is over. So I don't want to see things come to that for Carlos Sainz Jr. Okay, now we come to a gentleman who always has an opinion, and what I like, he's never afraid to say what he wants to say, and that could only be JV, Jacques Villeneuve. He says, and I quote, "At Red Bull, they are also frustrated. There is no way around it. The car is fast but difficult to drive. To grab the last much-needed tenths in the battle against Ferrari, Max Verstappen and Sergio Perez will have to pull out all the stops. Ferrari is marginally faster but seemingly easier to drive and easier to tune. They will still be competing at the front on a lesser weekend. This is psychologically tough for Red Bull." End quote. And that's really what Jenson Button said about Lewis Hamilton. Even on a bad day, he's still very quick. And that's where Ferrari this season is. If they're not going to win a race, they will be at least second. And finishing second to Max in a couple of races in the next few races, if that happens, I don't think it's going to hurt Charles Leclerc too much. Okay, sir? Anything you might want to say, sir?
Well, don't forget Fernando. He's still El Machismo.
Well, on paper and digitally, he is. We would like to see some results that will say that. And that cannot happen unless he has the package. So I feel the pain of Rogers and Machismo. But he made his own bed. In his case, actually, he made his own futon. But that's the way it goes. So we're going to move forward. Okay, sir, now we come to the glitz and glamour Grand Prix of the season. Monaco Grand Prix, of course. The president of Automobile Club of Monaco, Michel Boeri, he was speaking on reporting that Monaco Grand Prix was in danger of being dropped for money reasons after this season. And this was widely reported. So he said, and I quote, "It was suggested that Liberty Media's demands were too excessive for Monaco and the Grand Prix would no longer be held. That's not true. We are still in talks with them and we must now make it concrete by signing a contract. I can guarantee you that after 2022, the Grand Prix will continue to take place. I don't know if the contract will be for 3 or 5 years, but that's a detail," end quote. We did not have a Grand Prix because of COVID in Monaco not too long ago. If this thing disappears, will you miss this race, sir?
I will, simply because I know the French Grand Prix will disappear, and this is the only thing we've got. So I like it. It's in a beautiful spot. It's historic. Well, if it disappears, I'll cry, but I'll still go to the vintage Monaco Grand Prix.
Yeah, that's something very high on my bucket list also. It is held every 2 years, right?
Correct. It's biannual.
And I once, actually, it was a question to Olivier Panis when there was no French Grand Prix. And I agree with you, it will disappear sooner or later. Maybe they can have the French Grand Prix in Monte Carlo. I mean, for all practical purposes, it's all Francais anyway. What say you?
Yeah, but then Monaco will start crying. And the Prince, you know, he's very sensitive.
Well, you know, Liberty Media can get him some personalized industrial-sized boxes of Kleenex from Kimberly-Clark. That should not be a problem. Okay, sir, continuing with the M&M flavor, we come to Miami GP. This is beautiful. According to Billy Joel, some people like to get away from the neighborhood, hop a flight to Miami Beach or Hollywood. In today's world, some people just like to be and moan. Some folks in Miami Gardens at this stage are making a last-ditch effort for the race to be canceled, claiming bodily damage from the sound of racing cars. From these racing cars, hybrid engine, you gotta be kidding me. Miami Grand Prix's engineering firm estimate that the event will generate noise up to 97 decibels at homes within a 2.5-mile radius of the stadium, that is the Miami Dolphin Stadium, similar to the sound levels produced by a chainsaw, according to their statement. And I say, we're racing in Florida, not Texas. Let the global show go on. If you are looking for a bone to be thrown in the form of Benjamins, please bark a little louder. Mr. Rogers, what is your cat scratch fever on this frivolous lawsuit?
I say let the games begin. Even the soft underbelly of Ted Nugent's band wouldn't want to interfere in this glorious occasion.
Yeah, and this 2.5-mile radius, I don't know what kind of research they did on this. I mean, if they were talking about the V10s and the Matra V12s, I can understand. But Mr. Rogers, my biggest disappointment since I've been following Formula One, January 1973, was when I went to the preseason testing in 2014, I believe it was, with Dr. Miguel at Jerez de la Frontera. And I heard these cars and I said, what a disaster. And I remember at the first hybrid era US Grand Prix at COTA, Austin, once the race started, my impression was, you can put up a tent here and sleep and you won't even wake up with the sound these cars are making. So I'm kind of surprised they're saying that this will reach 2.5-mile radius. But who knows? Maybe they have big ears in Miami.
I believe they have vintage years, and all the footage and data they were getting was from 1999 or 1998. I think they were listening to V10s.
Yeah, and you know, in a different article I read very recently, just last week, apparently Miami Gardens has one of the highest violence ratio in the United States. So maybe the residents prefer gunshots to popping sounds of a turbo engine. I don't know, but I will find out when I get there.
You will, flak jacket included.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea, Mr. Rogers. I have not done my weekly checking on the prices, but I'll keep an eye. I'm going to drive down there anyway, and if I can buy a cheap ticket, a reasonably priced ticket before the race, I'll attend the race. Otherwise, I'll enjoy some Miami Beach rumba and Jamaican rum. That's not a bad deal on a weekend.
No, and don't forget your Ortega burger.
Oh, yes. With Cuban bread. Cuban bread is very popular here. The Fidel flavor is what they recommend. But that's top of the line. Okay, sir, now back to Max Verstappen. I don't know if you know this. He started his own racing team, Verstappen.com Racing, and they are going to support a 20-year-old Dutch racer by the name of Thierry Vermeulen in the ADAC GT Master Series, which is a German-based series. And here's a shocker. Man, can you guess who the sponsor of Max Verstappen Racing Team is?
Oscar Mayer Wiener.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea, but the actual sponsor is Red Bull. Who would have thought? Okay, now this is the beauty of legalities, I say. Unlucky 13. Uralkali claimed to repay 13 million sponsorship money has been rejected by Haas. And this is, of course, the petrochemical fertilizer company owned by Nikita Mazepin's Papito Dimitri. Haas, a cash-strapped team owned by a billionaire, responded to the claim by saying it has the right to end the deal because of a clause in the sponsorship agreement which stated that Uralkali does not injure, bring into dispute, ridicule, or lessen the public reputation, goodwill, or favorable image of Haas. Wow. Now, where do I go to find the favorable image of Haas? You tell me.
It's over in the basement in Charlotte's City Hall.
Well, it could be. If you said basement in Charlotte, if you had said basement in Chelsea, then it would be a different issue. I think it's time for Jacoby and Myers and F. Lee Bailey of Formula One to get busy. As Paul Newman once said, lawyers have to eat also. And Mr. Rogers, you and I have not discussed much about aviation over the 50 years we have known each other. But, you know, all my friends who follow, I mean, diehard fans of Formula One, they also have quite a bit of interest in aviation. So I found this tidbit, historical tidbit, which I thought was very interesting. Listen to this. The Grand Marshal for the 1935 Indy 500 was a lady from Oakland, California, Amelia Earhart. Can you believe that?
I do believe that.
Very, very interesting. Shall we take a break, sir?
It's a good time for a nice ice-cold Olympia. So we'll be back after this brief bubbly message.
Hello, I'm Jean Lizy, and you are listening F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. In now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. Today, now we present a special conversation, which I enjoyed immensely, with Miss Jen Harvey. Her husband, Tony, used to work in Formula One for many years. He was with Arrows, ATS, Brabham, March also. So she is based in York, South Carolina. I drove there a couple of weekends ago. And when we were talking on the phone before I even went there, I said to her, you have such fascinating stories with people like Gunnar Nielsen, Mike Butler, James Hunt, Brian Redman, and so many people. And I said, you know, we have to record your conversation if you don't mind. So she kindly agreed, and we did this recording. The whole family has been involved in motor racing. One of our sons is working for Chip Ganassi's racing team in IMSA. And the other son used to race here in the United States. He is now a writer based in Key Largo, Florida. And she also has a big selection of books that she is in process of selling. And if anybody has interest in any of her books, please send me an email. I can forward a listing of books she has available. And so, and of course, the email address is Nasser@F1Weekly, or you can send it to Clark@F1Weekly, and we will send you the listing of these fine motor racing history. They range from technical matters to Colin Chapman to Gerhard Berger, and very good selection of books she has. So I hope listeners all over the world enjoyed this conversation with Jen Harvey, and I would like to thank her again for her time and wish her all the best.
Okay, folks, I'm in beautiful York, South Carolina, with fabulous motor racing memories and stories with Miss Jen Harvey. Jen, welcome to the crazy world of F1 Weekly. How are you today?
I'm very well. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Okay. Give us a little background of how you got into the world of motor racing.
My husband started with minis, tuning minis for people. He then started racing his own A40, which was all spruced up and made a lot of noise, and he raced it at Brands Hatch. He then went on to race a Sprite. Then he built a Ford. It was called an Attila, and he raced that. And then meanwhile, he was getting himself working from his own garage, which was called Flintstone Racing. He then transferred to real racing, professional racing and mechanicking. And to this end, we were living in Sussex in England, in Middleton-on-Sea. And Tony went to work for David Purley. I think we started off in Formula 3 and then moved up to Formula 2 with David, who we knew very well, and his wife and family. They lived in the same village. He was a great guy. He was a crazy guy in his plane, doing all sorts of stunts over the sea, which ultimately led to his demise. But I do remember him flying me to Austria one day, flying me down over the Danube and saying, "Look, there's the blue Danube. It's really brown, isn't it?" which made us laugh. But yes, he flew me into Salzburg to join my husband for a race down there.
Yeah, I was at Salzburgring just last month. What a small world. Was your husband involved with him when he had a huge, huge, very high G-force accident, I believe, at Silverstone?
Yes, he was.
He was?
Yes, okay. He was.
And in terms of a person, how do you remember him? You said he was crazy, which we all know.
Oh, yes, but yes. He was wild. He was wild. But he was good-hearted. But he was very, he was obsessed with trying dangerous things.
Oh, really?
I think it was inevitable he had to die the way he did.
Sort of like Patrick Depailler, he was kind of crazy too.
Yes.
Okay, now we're sitting in your home and you have all these photographs. Patrick Tambay, René Arnoux, Dieter Quester, Gerhard Berger, and all these people. When you look back at your wonderful life with your husband, what really stands out?
Oh, gosh.
Or what are the memories you cherish most?
Well, of being able to be married to such a great guy who lost his life when he shouldn't have done. But being able to share his wonderful trips, obviously because he was traveling most of our married life while he was in Formula 2 and Formula 1. He was going all over the world. But he'd always come back with wonderful stories for our children. And I was very lucky to be able to go with him or join him on quite a lot of trips to Europe, which I really enjoyed. I loved going to the places. I loved when we went to Paul Ricard. We had our 12-year-old son Michael there with us. I remember Ronnie Peterson winning his first Grand Prix, and my Michael, little Michael, shook his hand and he said, "Mummy, I'll never wash my hand again." He was so thrilled.
Yeah, Ronnie was my first hero because, you know, he won his first race in 73, and that's when I started following Formula One races. Did you get to know Ronnie Peterson?
Not really. We knew Gunnar Nilsson very, very well, but not so Ronnie. I mean, Tony worked for him, or worked with him at that time. He wasn't somebody I ever really got to know.
Well, yeah, I tell you, I still don't know to this day what language it was. But Gunnar Nilsson won his first and only race in Belgium, Zolder,
and I was able to listen to it. And I think it was either Finnish or Swedish language life results. I was very excited for him. And now, your husband spent quite a bit of time with him, and I understand Gunnar lived at your place?
Yes, Gunnar stayed with us for periods of time when he was doing attorney work for Rapid Movements. They sponsored Gunnar in his rise to from Formula 3 into Formula 2, which of course was very successful. And it was a wonderful time for all of us, with lots of celebrations going on all the time. And Gunnar was always the party boy. He was always up for all sorts of things. So we had many happy memories with him.
Now, he unfortunately died of cancer, I believe it was 1978, shortly after Ronnie Peterson's death.
Yes.
If I remember correctly. Did you know him in his final days?
My husband did. Yeah. My husband, Tony, did. He would go and see him in the hospital.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it was very sad. Now, among all these, this list you have prepared, so impressive, one of the names that caught my attention, Mike Bottler. You know, he died some years ago.
Yes.
In San Francisco. Give us a little background on your husband's involvement with him, and if you knew him personally.
I didn't really know Mike Bottler. I had met him going to races with Tony, but he never came to our home, so we were never particularly friendly, although Tony was friendly with him, because obviously they travelled to races.
Now, you mentioned your 12-year-old kid shook hands with Ronnie Peterson. How much of the racing interest from Dad did your two sons take? And one of them is still involved in racing, so give us a little story on them, please.
Well, yes, they both were involved. Michael was the one who liked to travel to races, and he would go in the truck with the truck driver to races. He'd go to Italy and various places and meet his dad. This was before they were flying. Nick preferred to stay at home, but then Nick became the kart driver, and he was 10 years old when he started kart racing. And again, Rapid Movements were involved, because he was given his first kart, and they sponsored him for a while, along with my own brother, Mike, who had an antique business in Stow-on-the-Wold in Gloucestershire in England, and he sponsored him. And Nick became part of the British team, and we travelled to Europe and all over with him during his karting. That was up and until 1982. I think we were in the last World Championships. His brother Michael at the time was working for, he'd built up a reputation as a very good mechanic, and he was working for Moira's in Germany, near Munich.
Okay, one of your sons was voted driver of the day in a race event weekend, when Senna was also competing in a different series. Give us a little background on that, please.
Yes, Nick was driving one of his drives in Formula Ford. We really struggled to get him from karting into Formula Ford, and his brother sponsored him and paid for his car and was his mechanic for the first year or so. And we obviously pulled in whatever we could. In fact, I had to go to my bank manager, and we had a small farm at the time, and I had sheep, and I used to sell them for meat when I'd raised them. I gave the bank manager the impression I had more sheep than I did, really, and bargained with him for loan me money for my Nick to keep him racing. And between us, we did. Well, on this particular day, he was racing in Donington Park on a terrible, terrible day with really heavy rain. And Senna was racing in the Formula 3 race, and Nick was in the Formula Ford. And I would have to speak to him and ask him what position he came in, but I don't think he actually won. But he was awarded driver of the day because of the conditions and how he raced, which was great pride to his father and I, and to Michael.
Great. Now, looking at this name here, very, very familiar. Carlos Pache, and the Brazilian track is named after him. Give us a little background on your husband and your dealings with him and time with him.
Gosh, yes, that's such a long time ago. Carlos was such a sweetheart. He was really nice, and we spent quite a lot of time with him, I seem to remember, and I think So did my boys. I always remember him, I think it was at Thruxton, and he led the race and he was about to win, and he ran out of petrol about 50 yards from the line, and he got out and pushed it. But I don't think he was allowed the win. I think somebody passed him, because you had to be in the car to win.
Yes.
Heartbreaking.
Yeah. And Carlos Pache, once upon a time, was teammate to another Carlos, Carlos Reutemann, also known as Lole, at Brabham, of course, and your husband worked there. And of course, you know, Gordon Murray was there, Herbie Blash, Charlie Whiting, and Bernie owned the team. Tell us about your experiences with the other Carlos, Carlos Reutemann, especially the incident at Paul Rica.
Well, I was fortunate enough to be at Paul Ricard with my husband and Michael on one trip when Ronnie won. And I can remember walking down the pits feeling like Jack the Lad, really, myself. And I think I was looking pretty good in those days. And I got the eye from Carlos Reutemann. I probably shouldn't say that. I gave him the eye back, and I really enjoyed it. I thought, well, okay, here we go.
Yeah.
It was a glancing thing. I adore my husband.
Okay. Did you ever meet his wife, Mimi Cha?
No, I didn't.
You know, I met him some years ago. I did an interview with him in Buenos Aires, and he was kind enough to show up at my hotel. I wanted to tell him, but I did not. You know, when he was racing, and in those days, you know, you just look at racing magazines. There was no internet, no satellite TV. And I remember a Road and Track, Autosport, whatever magazines I was perusing in those days, I saw more pictures of Mimi Cha Reutemann than Carlos Reutemann. So that was interesting.
She was probably a very good-looking lady.
Yeah. And, yeah, Carlos passed away not too long ago. Pretty sad there. Okay, now, Bruno Giacomelli, another name I remember very well. I believe he was European Formula 2 champion with the BMW Power, and then also had one pole position of all the places at Watkins Glen, drove for Alfa Romeo. Let's talk about Bruno. You said he was a funny guy.
Yes, he was. In fact, my boys were, I mean, they were in their late teens, and both working, I'm sure. I can't remember the year. They would race around together with Bruno. They had a nickname for him, and I can't remember what it was. But yes, he wasn't very tall, but he was a very jolly, funny little guy.
Yeah, in the press they used to refer to him as Bruno Giacomelli.
Yes, they used to call him that.
Yeah, the Italian-Irishman.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. Okay, now we have some very nice photographs here of a young Gerhard Berger, your husband, who was working with him at ATS. I am sure you know the name Günther Schmidt.
I do indeed, yes. And you want me to tell that story of him jumping on the
Yeah.
Well, yes, the design team made this what they thought was a really good front wing, and they were very proud of it. They put it on the car, and while it was still in the pits, Mr. Schmidt came and jumped on it and broke it, and that was that's what he thought of it, and he said, "Get rid of it."
Yeah, he was quite a character, and anybody who worked with him has similar stories. I was actually talking to Christian Danner, and I asked him about this guy. He said he was okay. He said he was all right. But he was, you know, you get these characters in Formula One every now and then.
You do, and Christian Danner was always referred to as Christmas dinner.
Yes. yeah.
I remember that.
Very true. Okay, then we have here Thierry Boutsen. Let's talk about him. You said he was a very nice guy, and I met him once. I think he was too nice to be in Formula One, just like Bottas.
Probably. I can't speak for Bottas, but Thierry was very nice. He was a super guy. He got on very well with my husband, Tony, and they had a very good relationship, working relationship. Thierry knew my son was starting racing, and he actually gave him one of his Formula One racing suits. My son was able to wear it in his humble Formula Ford days, wear this really nice Formula One suit, which he was kind like that. Really nice guy.
Okay, this next name takes me back to a very sad day at Sanford. Roger Williamson.
Oh, that was terrible. He was a good friend. of Tony's, and Tony was there. David Purley, who was a very good friend of his as well, he was screaming at the marshals to bring the fire things, and he was screaming, "Get me out, get me out," and poor Pearls couldn't. It was a terrible, terrible day, one that we'd never forget.
Yes, pretty sad day for sure. Okay, next we have what Mr. Murray used to say, R. Nige.
Nigel Mansell.
Before you say anything about him, what I have noticed in the English press about Nigel Mansell, either the media hates him, which I hate to say is most of the media. They never say hardly ever positive things about him. But the very few who like him, they think he's awesome. I had a chance to interview him once at Laguna Seca. He was super nice and polite to me. So that's my memory. What's your take on?
I don't remember him personally very much, but I don't think my husband ever had a problem with Nigel. I think he was I always thought he was a gentleman. So despite the media, I'll go against them.
Have you noticed that in the media, they normally are very anti, they don't say good things about him, which I'm very surprised.
I'm surprised too, because that's not my estimation of him.
Yes. And you know this guy, Peter Waugh, the ex-team manager at Lotus. Boy, I've never seen or heard anyone in racing. I mean, Ayrton Senna and Alain Prost disliked each other, but they had their limits. But Peter Waugh was totally out of control. He called Nigel an uncouth Brummy.
Oh, well, perhaps he was. Perhaps he was. Now, Alain Prost, I always remember, I used to work for an estate agent in England. They call it real estate over here in America. I worked there for them for 10 years before I moved over here. And I was shopping in Milton Keynes, which is a sort of a newly built city in England, and in my lunch hour. And I thought, I know who that man is walking along just in front of me. And I thought, well, I was always collecting autographs as I could for the boys, and they have an amazing collection now. And I walked up beside him and I said, "Hello, Mr. Prost, could I possibly have your autograph?" And he said, "How did you recognize me? Nobody in Mountains knows me." And I said, "Well, I recognize you. I go to the races." Anyway, he happily gave me his autograph, and I was very grateful. And it's in amongst my son's collections.
Oh, that's very good.
I remember getting Niki Lauda's. Now, Niki Lauda was very difficult to get. He wasn't very good at giving autographs. He was a very private man. And he was walking down towards the pits with his wife, and I was just walking in the opposite direction. But I saw him coming, and I thought, he's on his own, well, just with his wife. No people around him. And I walked up to him, and I said, "I'm really sorry to interrupt you. Could you possibly give me an autograph for my son?" And he did. So that was another one in the book.
Okay. And one of your son is now involved in IMSA racing.
Yes.
Give us a little background on his activities.
Yes. Michael has done Formula 2. He's worked for PPI in a management role in NASCAR. And he was always interested in sports cars. He is now director of the IMSA racing for Chip Ganassi, based in Indianapolis. They've just won the Sebring race, 6-hour race. And in fact, in an hour, he'll be doing a sprint race coming from Long Beach, California.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, now we have some more interesting names here. Didier Pironi and his fellow crazy Frenchman, René Arnoux. So your association or experiences with them, please.
Yes, I didn't know Didier quite so personally, I don't think, but René Arnoux and his wife, when they were racing at Silverstone, they wanted some quiet space. And rather than go and stay in the hotel like with the teams, my husband was working for his team, and he invited him to stay at our... We had quite a big house in the country where we had animals and a bit of farm, horses. They gladly came and stayed with us, and they were such lovely guests, so nice to have. They were lovely people. Really enjoyed having them.
Yeah. Okay, now next name. You know, every now and then you get into racing some drivers who you never hear anybody say a negative thing. Gilles Villeneuve,
Ronnie Peterson, and this next gentleman, Michele Alboreto. I was a huge, huge fan of Michele Alboreto. Can we talk about him a little bit, please?
Yes. He again was he was around Silverstone. I'm sure it was him. My memory's losing me about him. I'm sorry, I can't really. I can remember Bruno Giacomelli and some of the others. Michele, I can't remember quite so much about. Sorry.
No, no worries. Okay, another gentleman. I don't know if he's well liked, but he's very popular. Eddie Irvine.
Oh, Eddie Irvine. Now, who did I think you were going to say? Eddie Irvine. Yes, we knew all about him. I thought you were going to say James Hunt.
We can talk about him also.
Yes, well, James Hunt, of course, was a real, well, everybody knows he was a womanizer and a drinker and a raise hell guy. He lived very close to us. You know, my husband had quite a lot to do with him. And Lord Hesketh, of course, from his house, which was in Toaster, which was just right near Silverstone Circuit, and that's where we live.
Well, you know, there's an interview available on YouTube with James Hunt, and they asked him about how they went into Formula One, and his classic response was, because I think they had done Formula 2 races and then moved up,
yes.
And James' response was, we were not winning in Formula 2, so we decided to move up to Formula 1. And they did win a race there, so which was very, very good. Now, your husband worked for several teams, ATS, Arrows, Brabham, and was associated with a lot of drivers. Did he ever express to you drivers who were very sort of like supremely talented or naturally gifted, or any sort of feeling he may have said to you that this guy was very good to work with, or one guy was a nightmare? Any remembrance you may have of that?
Well, I guess he must have over the years. We also talked to them and we were friendly with some of them, and some left a lasting impression. He was very fond of Paul Hawkins, very great friend, of course. And he very much admired his driving. That was in sports cars. He had a lot of respect for Nelson Piquet because he knew him as a kid when he was racing, and he saw him sort of grow up into it. And he always thought he was going to get there. He had what it took. He had a huge admiration for Ayrton Senna. All these good ones that get killed. Ronnie Peterson. He was a very cool Swede. He wasn't a warm, happy-go-lucky Swede like Gunnar. He was a colder Swede.
You know, you mentioned Paul Hawkins. He's a gentleman from Australia. He went into the water in Monte Carlo like Ascari. And your husband was at the track, Orton Park, when he was killed.
He was. He was his mechanic that day.
Yeah, you know, in those days, racing was very, very dangerous and fatalities were so common. But I'm curious, how does it affect a crew chief or a mechanic who's working on a car? It has to be, I mean...
It did.
Very devastating.
It was. Tony was sharing a room with him the night before. Paul woke up and, well, I don't know if he'd been asleep, but he started talking to Tony in the middle of the night and they sat up and talked. And Paul had a premonition that he was going to die the next day.
Really?
Tony obviously was talking him out of it. Tony was a great talker and a believer in helping people. He was a very spiritual soul, my husband, and he was very good at helping people out if they had a problem, mentally and physically. But he talked to Paul at great length through the night, and they had breakfast and moved on to the circuit, and Paul was his normal cheery self, and as he always was. Of course, then the inevitable happened, which broke my husband's heart. And my sons, one of them saw it. Michael, who was older than Nick at the time, saw the blaze before I could switch the television off. It was devastating for us because he was such a friend of the family and he used to play with our children.
Now, one of the teams your husband worked for, March, one of the founders was Mr. Max Mosley. Any experiences, remembrance from days at March? Any exciting stories, interesting stories? Like the six-wheel car, you can talk about that.
Oh, well, yes. Tony had a lot of dealings with March. I think I knew Robin Hurd more than I knew Max Mosley, because Max Mosley was sort of you-can't-get-to-him type of person. He was in his office, and he didn't really... I remember going to a race, I think it was in Hockenheim, and he didn't really approve of the wives coming, and you had to keep well out of the way. But Robin Hurd was a more friendly soul, and Tony got on with them all. He got on with people wherever he worked, actually, and wherever he worked, wherever he left, he always left goodwill behind him, which I think was something that you should always be able to do in a job.
Sure. Now, after you folks moved to the United States, did your husband work in IndyCars or some American series?
No, my husband retired, and we moved over here in the millennium year, 2000, in the end of April, actually. So I guess it's 22 years, just right now. And he didn't work for a while. There was no need. But then when our sons moved to, with PPI, when PPI gave up in California and Cal Wells moved the organization into NASCAR in North Carolina, we all moved there from California, both my sons. They both worked for Cal. Tony was always wanting to fiddle around with cars and do things. And Cal had some older cars that wanted restoring. So Tony started restoring those for him at the factory. And then he became interested in the racing and the NASCAR. And he got very keen on helping the over-the-wall guys. My husband was a trained masseur and was always interested in keeping fit. Thus, one time Nick was, and he did a triathlon. And Michael has always been a keen fitness runner, skier. They both ski and do all that sort of thing. And so Tony started training the over-the-wall guys to keep fit, and they loved him. He'd time them, and they'd practice and practice and practice. And that was the time with the Tide car and Ricky Craven, and he really enjoyed doing that.
I remember that car very well, and I remember very well Ricky Craven's victory at one of the oval tracks where he was banging doors with another driver as they crossed the checkered flag. Very impressive. I want to ask you this thing. With all your time in motorsports, directly with your husband, meeting all these people, what was the things that you really enjoyed about the world of motor racing?
I think the camaraderie and the way people would help people. I mean, we're going back into the 70s and 80s now. It was a different world when everybody got on and mixed well together. And it was a good family, a good crowd to mix with. And it's like a circus. You go from race meeting to race meeting, the same people meeting up and enjoying parties together. And there was a lot more freedom there now. I mean, Formula One these days is a very tight-knit circle that very few are allowed into. And I think it's strangers aren't welcome, it seems to me. But in those days, it was far more happy-go-lucky, although it was still very professional.
Now, one group that is being welcomed quite a bit is ladies in racing. You've seen it up close, how difficult, how tough it is. Not saying it cannot be done by ladies. In your opinion, A, what should be done to bring ladies into motor racing as drivers? And do you see any lady out there who in the next 5 years you think is capable of being a, you know, professional Formula One racing driver, not just a token type of driver, if you know what I mean?
Well, I think for a lady to be a racing driver, she just has to go about it the same way as a man. But she has to get a lot of support behind her and really show her credentials, because like anything for a lady to do in what is really known as a masculine sport, she has to excel. Unfortunately, there haven't been that many that have really excelled that much to really get there. I do remember back in the days when my husband raced his A40, there was a time when I used to go to the track a lot. I said to him, you know, I think I'd like to have a go. And he was perfectly happy for me to do so. But when I was about to do so, I found I was expecting a child, which was my first, it was Michael. So it never happened, because I wasn't going to race while I was in that condition. But I'd have given it a go. But if you've got it and you've got support behind you and the money, You need so much money these days. That's just true. Good luck to you.
Yeah. Okay, now coming to today's Formula One, we have the Australian Grand Prix happening in a few hours. Your thoughts on Lewis Hamilton as a racing driver and your thoughts on Max?
Well, I don't know what their star signs are, but they couldn't be more different. There's no doubt about Lewis's talent. He's a highly talented driver, and he's probably very unhappy this year and not being up the front because he doesn't like losing, and he's not a good loser. It's a shame, but he's not a good loser. But then the top drivers aren't. They're sulky. Max, on the other hand, he's not getting it all his way either. It's lovely to see the competition. I wish them both well. Hamilton's got to work a lot harder this year, but then Max has got to work a lot harder because he's up against Leclerc. I mean, who knew the Ferrari was going to come so good this year? But I think this year's racing is better than ever. There's more chance of more people getting up there, and let the youngsters come through and do it.
Who do you think will be champion at the end of the season? Not who you want, but who do you think?
Who do I think?
Yeah.
Well, I think it's going to be Max or Leclerc. I don't think there's any chance of anybody else, really.
Yeah, that's what I think.
I think it has to be one or the other. Yeah. And whoever does it in the best way they can. I do like the way that Max and Leclerc seem to be able to race against each other without being dirty.
Well, only two races.
Well, let's hope they can continue it through more races, because it's very exciting to watch them. And although you have your heart in your mouth, you are now expecting them to do it cleanly. And I don't think, perhaps I shouldn't say this, but I don't think Max and Hamilton did it very fairly.
Yes.
I think they're both a bit dirty.
Yes. Final question, of all the racing tracks you've been to, your favourite racing track, please.
Let me see. I think I have to say Laguna Seca.
That's love beautiful.
Laguna Seca.
Okay, among European tracks?
European tracks, Salzburg.
Oh, cool. Very cool. Yeah, it is very nice. Okay, Jan, it's a great pleasure to meet you. Thank you so much for your time, and I hope you have a great season, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you very much. It's a delight to talk about my husband.
Thank you. You're very welcome.
Jan Harvey, thanks for giving us the rest of the story. Nasser?
Yes, sir. So, Mr. Rogers, I am very excited. This weekend we have a Formula One race at Imola. I've been to this track, and man, what a beautiful track this is. Pretty much surrounded by houses. There's a school inside. And, sir, after Imola, we have the Grand Prix in Florida. This will be the second time Formula One will race in the Orange State. And of course, the very first Formula One Grand Prix took place here at Sebring. So I'm really looking forward to both these events and remaining races. I did check with my contact. No chance of getting a media pass because of the COVID restrictions and testing. I am hoping that it won't be the case by September, which is when I want to go to Monza very much, and won't be the case at Austin Grand Prix. So there you have it, Mr. Rogers. Did you watch the dirt race at Bristol?
No. So some of us have lines drawn in the dirt, and I will not cross that line. It was juvenile. It was stupid. It was naive. It was backwards. It was lame. It was dumb. It was red. It was bud. Didn't like it.
You know, they are trying everything to bring in crowd. You know, some years ago, especially a few years after they split in IndyCars, NASCAR ratings were higher than Major League Baseball. They were below NFL, always will be. But, you know, now they are just trying every which way. They created these races in stages, and that's what, you know, where they lost me as a spectator. I don't like these stop and go, you know, like an intermittent Viper kind of racing. So that was very sad. Now they are trying. I mean, what are they going to do next? Throw dirt on Watkins Glen, because that's also owned by the France family, and try racing there. Maybe they should, you know, what will be even better? Maybe try a 10-lap race in reverse.
That's a good idea, Nasser. I like that, especially with Dutch cars called DAFs, because it has a variable speed, so you can go just as fast in reverse as you can in forward. So there you go. I think DAF should enter NASCAR. Once again, Nass, you're on the edge of everything that's bitching.
Oh, the least I can do for your favorite series, give them some cute ideas.
I understand, but what can you do? But on the other hand, you know what? Everybody's happy, and we have Imola, Fernando's going to be there. Mick Schumacher and Fernando will hug. It's going to be awesome.
Yes, and you know, next month is a great month for motor racing. We have the Miami Grand Prix, we have the Monaco Grand Prix, and we have the Big Daddy, the Indy 500. So it should be a momentous month.
You forgot a couple of things here.
The NASCAR race at Martinsville?
That, and May 23rd is my birthday. And who else's birthday is May 23rd, Nasser?
Fernando Alonso?
No, the greatest number two of all time.
Oh, and his papa.
Exciting, exciting. And don't forget four-legged Rubinho.
Yes. You know, when I interviewed this guy, Tony Kanaan, I did tell him about the four-legged Rubinho.
Awesome.
He said he will tell Barrichello about it. That was, who says Formula One is not popular in the US of A? And was it our man Larry Carter who brought this wonderful news to our attention in the first place?
You know, I believe it was, and I believe it's Larry Carter's birthday.
Today?
No, I don't know. It's somebody's birthday. Hi. It's getting rough out there, Nass.
I know. Father Age will do that to you.
It's somebody's birthday. So there you have it, Nass. But no, the month of May is big, big, big in the Palatial Studios, in the Rubinho Studios. So yes, we have a lot of stuff to look forward to. Nasser, and of course, Fernando winning his first race, which is going to come up very, very soon.
I certainly hope so. And believe it or not, I'm going to be very happy and excited if Nando can pull out a win.
It will be exciting. I will pull out my Kimoa hat and glasses. And I promise to walk the streets of San Jose.
It has to be the biggest margin between wins, right? Because the last time he won was when?
1942.
No, when he was with Ferrari, right?
Correct. Monza.
Even that, when was that? It's been quite a few years, right?
I think Monza 2010.
Wow. That's already 12 years now.
Yeah. It's amazing, huh?
Yeah, everybody is pushing the age, that's for sure. It's amazing, you know. I remember when Kimi Raikkonen came. I remember when Jenson Button came. He was so young, he could not even drive the rental car in Australia when he went for his debut in 2020. And these people have done their thing and now retired in some cases many years. It's amazing how time keeps flying.
Good night.
Bye-bye.